Good evening, truth seekers. It is I, once again, Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, sitting in for Mike Malloy, who's vacationing all this week with his lovely wife, Kathy. We're going to be broadcasting once again from K-Talk AM 1150 in Los Angeles, California. And we got a hell of a show for you. Sybelle Edmonds is coming up. Wake the kids, bother the neighbors, truth seekers over on DU, spread the word over there, because I did not have the time, the time to get the word out to you. Why? Why didn't I have the time? Well, because that's where he was. Oh, that wasn't the Appalachian Trail. We were covering the Mark Sanford story on Monday, on Tuesday, and frankly, when I was covering it, I felt it was a pretty frivolous thing to cover, to be frank, to use this valuable airtime to talk about this missing governor and the nonsense that was going on with him. You know, kind of frivolous, but it was also kind of funny because, as it turned out, when they said that he was hiking at the Appalachian Trail, Sunday was Naked Hiking Day. So that was kind of funny. We thought we had to cover that. Well, apparently there is now a new euphemism called hiking the Appalachian Trail. And we can thank Governor Mark Sanford for that. The Republican, the once presidential hopeful, Mark Sanford, who wasn't in the Appalachian Trail. He wasn't even in the country at all. He was in Argentina. What was he doing there? Well, maybe later in the show, after the kids are to bed, we'll read some of the emails that he was that explain what he was doing there to his girlfriend, to his Argentinian girlfriend. Argentinian girlfriend. Unbelievable. And what's unbelievable, there's so many unbelievable things here. One, his staff didn't know, or at least they claim they didn't know, and Sanford put out a statement later today saying that the staff didn't know. So they weren't lying for him on purpose. They were just lying for him, and apparently he let them do it. He said he was on the Appalachian Trail. He's turned off his cell phone. There's no cell signal up there. Well, I think there was probably a cell signal where he was down in Argentina, where he didn't want to let anyone know that he was with his girlfriend. Missing Father's Day. Mr. Family Values. Mr. Clinton's got to resign because he had an affair. Unbelievable. But what I started to say, what was the most unbelievable to me was on Monday when the staff came out, when his staff came out and said, oh, he's on the Appalachian Trail, everything is fine. Don't worry, he just likes his solitude. He's out thinking after a tough legislative session. Guess what? What did the corporate media do? What did AP do? What did CNN do? They started putting up headlines, quote, mystery solved. No further questions. Mystery solved. Governor Sanford, he's hiking the Appalachian Trail. It's a mountain out of a molehill. Did anybody stop? Well, yeah, somebody stopped to notice. Josh Marshall and those folks over at Talking Points Memo, the bloggers, we noticed that in those statements from the Sanford's staffers, that they hadn't actually talked to the governor. That when they were saying, he's hiking the Appalachian Trail, everything is fine, they never said, oh, we talked to him, and he's doing fine, and he wonders what's going on. They didn't say that until, what was it, I think Tuesday morning. When they said, oh, we've talked to the governor, and he, what was the quote, he's surprised at the concern that's been expressed. Well, did they make up that quote as well, or did they really talk to him? But I can tell you what, as of Monday, they hadn't talked to him. It was clear from their statements they hadn't talked to them. The bloggers noticed they hadn't talked to him. AP, on the other hand, apparently didn't notice. AP, CNN, mystery solved. Everything fine. No, it wasn't fine. And, well, we found out today in a teary press conference, a bizarre press conference, where there was people standing behind him laughing. This was the most... Yeah. Yeah. No, don't look at... Did you see it? They were giggling behind these... I don't know if they were staffers. I don't know who they were. I don't know who's managing this thing. I suspect the staffers are going to be submitting their resignation right away because they made... he made them look like complete idiots. But yeah, there was people standing behind him laughing at the press conference. And frankly, it's not a funny story. It's a sad story. Yeah, it's a little funny. But, you know, he's got four kids. He's apparently deeply in love, it seems, with this woman from, girl from Ipanema, or wherever she's from down there. And I'm sure we'll be playing that song later. But lies. It was all lies. And that is what, where is he here? The lieutenant governor was not happy about any of this. He has been critical for days that the governor's staff had been lying about Sanford's whereabouts. The Republican critic of his has been saying this is nothing but lies, lies, lies. He's been saying it for days. Turns out it was lies. Well, we're going to take your calls on that, I suspect, later in the show. But I want to get to Sibel Edmonds, the whistleblower, who's going to speak, who's going to take your calls today, tonight. So if you want to talk to Sibel, we'll fill you in on who she is if you don't know who she is. But if you want to talk to Sibel, our number tonight and all this week, don't use Mike Malloy's number. Use our number, 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. The most gagged woman in America is how Sibel Edmonds has been described by the ACLU. She was the first, I believe she was the very first, person to have the state secrets privilege used against her by the Bush administration. She was a translator after 9/11. And what she heard, well, we still don't know all of what she heard. Maybe she'll tell us some of that tonight, because she's been gagged. And she's been trying to tell the story to the media, who didn't give a damn. The same media who were so incurious. Is that a word? Uncurious? Incurious? They didn't care. The same media that didn't care when Mark Stanford's staff said, oh, everything's fine, there's nothing to worry about here, these aren't the droids you're looking for. The same media had no interest when Sibel Edmonds wanted to tell her story. When she said, and she announced it at bradblog.com, that she would speak to any broadcast media, any mainstream major broadcast media, news network, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, she would have gone on and told her story. Anyone who wanted to take it. And she was risking going to jail, by the way, in announcing she would do that. And no bites. Not from this country. This admission, this announcement that we ran at Bradblog about a year or two ago made front page headlines all over the world. They know who Sibel is. Made front page headlines all over the world. Back here, nada. Nobody. They didn't care. I actually spoke. There was one nibble from a network affiliate, a network news outlet. Maybe later I'll say who they were. Network news outlet who was interested, but they didn't want to meet her conditions. Her conditions were basically, I want to tell my story, and if you don't, you can put it out live, or you can put it out close to live, but no editing, no taking the time to go and check it with the government so they have the time to throw me in jail and spike your story before it runs. She wanted to, you know, run right away, and so I sort of served as a mediator, and one of the folks I talked to at one of these networks said to me, well, Brad, we can't just put what she has to say right out on the air without reporting it, without verifying it. I said, what the hell are you talking about? You do this every damn day. You do it with Dick Cheney. You let him show up and tell any damn lies he wants. You don't verify that. You let Karl Rove, George Bush, Condi Rice, all of these guys parade on your cameras and give any damn lie they want. You don't check that. Why won't you check with Sibel Edmonds? Well, it turns out Sibel Edmonds, her story, her explosive story, was finally reported by the London Times, the Sunday Times in London, at least parts of it. And some of it had to do with the fact that nuclear weapons, nuclear secrets, were being sold to foreign countries, that top high-ranking officials, Republicans and some Democrats, were looking the other way, were doing nothing about it. And I'm talking about top officials. Mark Grossman comes to mind. I believe he was the second at the State Department for the last few years. We'll ask Sibel about that, see what she can tell us and what she cannot, although this a lot of this came out in the Sunday Times. This same administration that was telling us about WMDs, we had to go to war, We had to protect our secrets. The same administration was looking the other way as our secrets were being stolen from nuclear bases and sold to AQ Khan out there in Pakistan, who in turn sold them to North Korea, to Iran, to Libya. And instead of allowing this information to come out, what did the Bush administration do? They slapped a gag order on her. They made her the most gagged woman in America. And when she tried to protest this, when she took her case forward, what did they do? The government said, well, we're against that idea. We're against this case moving forward at all because of the state secrets privilege, and we're not even going to allow Sybelle Edmonds or her attorneys to sit in the courtroom while we argue this case. They have to leave. They had to leave the courtroom, and the government made their case, and when the news came back, it was like, oh, state secrets, you're out. No case. Took it all the way to the Supreme Court. And they said, oh, sorry, can't hear it. State secrets. We're going to be talking to Ms. State's Secrets, Sybelle Edmonds, and taking your calls on that and her new project, Project Expose MSM. Yes, she is naming names. She's asked whistleblowers to contact her with their stories, their name and names, folks in the media who have betrayed their trust, folks like Michael Isikoff at Newsweek, folks at Time Magazine. She's already run the first two reports. We're going to ask her about that and oh so much more, whatever is on your mind. 9-11. Give us a call, 877-520-1150. Sybelle Edmonds, coming up next. I'm Brad, in for Mike. Much more. Stick with us. Carrie tonight. Brad Friedman in for Malloy all week long. Joining me now, or momentarily here, Sybelle Edmonds is going to be with us, and we're going to take your calls throughout the hour. 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. What Sybelle can and can't say, I will leave up to her. I know what I can and can't say. We'll see what she decides she can and can't say. We'll talk about what I talked about before the break, her whistleblower revelations, working as an FBI translator after 9/11. Going to get her take on the Iranian elections, by the way. She is, I believe, either Iranian or her father is Iranian, one or the other. We'll find out. And, of course, Project Expose MSM. Sybelle Edmonds is the founder and director of National Security Whistleblowers Coalition. She worked as a language specialist for the FBI following 9/11. During her work with the Bureau, she discovered and reported serious acts of security breaches, cover-ups, and intentional blocking of intelligence that had national security implications. After she reported these acts to the FBI management, she was retaliated against by the FBI, fired in March of 2002. And, of course, since that time, court proceedings on her case have been blocked by the assertion of state secret privilege by the Bush administration first, and I believe that carries on with the Obama administration. We'll find out in a second. The Congress of the U.S. has looked at her case. She's because she's been gagged and prevented from any discussion of her case, she hasn't been able to talk about it since she first addressed Congress. That material that she gave to Congress has since been retroactively reclassified by the Department of Justice. She is also a Penn American I'm sorry, George Washington University Penn American Center Award winner of Newman's own First Amendment Award. Her new blog site is 123 Real Change. Her new project is Project Expose MSM. Sibel Edmonds, how are you? Oh, there we go. Sibel Edmonds, welcome to the Molloy Show.
Good evening, Brad. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. And, of course, I yammered on with the intro so long. We're going to have to take a break in a second, but we'll have you for the whole next part of the hour. I don't know if you heard the intro. Did I accurately bring us up to the point where we are somewhat at now as far
Absolutely.
As the background?
In fact, I don't have anything to add.
That's it?
Marvelous job, because you've been following this case for how many years now? What, 5 years? 6 years?
Too many years. Rub it in. Well, if we have nothing to talk about, that's it. Thank you, Sibel Edmonds, ladies and gentlemen. Well, real quick, what we can get in, I think, before we have to go to a break here in about 30 seconds, Sibel, is my question about the Obama administration. Have they continued the state secrets privilege that was applied during the Bush administration to your case?
Well, no, they didn't have to, because the case was over. In 2006, once we took it all the way up to the Supreme Court, as far as the courts were concerned, and therefore the state secrets privilege, the case was over. Mm-hmm. But there is no case. There is no active court case to invoke the state secrets privilege again or continue it. However, with the Congress, it's a different story, because Congress all along had the ability to have hearings on this and have me testify, have the witnesses testify, and they were not subject to the state secrets privilege, and they never used their authority, their jurisdiction, their power to do it.
Hold the thought, Sibel. We're going to pick it up right there after this break, and it'll be a nice long segment, all right? Sorry about the short segment here. Brad Friedman, in for Molloy. Call us, 877-520-1150 for Sibel Edmonds. We'll be right back.
Mike Molloy here, interrupting Brad Friedman's most excellent program. Wait, it's my program, and Brad is filling in. Uh-oh, but he's so good at this. Hey, I'll be back June 29th, and not a moment too soon.
Yeah, rub it in, Mike. Brad Friedman back on the Molloy Show. 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Giving out that number because it is different than Mike Molloy's usual number. So if you want to reach us, you gotta dial that one. We're speaking with Sibel Edmonds, the noted FBI translator, hired after 9/11, heard some stuff on the tapes there that made her quite concerned about a number of things. A couple of them, and we need to reset and hit some of these. Corruption within the translation unit at the FBI. And Sibel, this is something that I believe you have talked about, so correct me if I'm wrong. But
yes.
The corruption, the concern you had, folks, spies, actually, within the translation unit. Is that correct?
Correct. Those were concerns, but then they were addressed by the Justice Department Inspector General's office. So mm-hmm. they've been confirmed espionage cases, security breach cases within the FBI.
And so, good. The IG confirmed it, and action was taken on those cases, right?
No.
What?
No actions, of course.
No actions. So the folks that you had concerns about that might have been, what, ignoring certain documents in the Turkish translation department, ignoring certain documents, not translating them, or mistranslating them, right? Those folks were not, are they still working there, Sibel?
Last I heard, they were. But again, as I said, they are no longer considered a concern. Two senators, Senator Grassley and Senator Leahy, 6 years ago declared them as clear cases of espionage.
And so, obviously, you're being sarcastic when you're saying they're no longer a concern. The senators declared them a clear case of espionage. The FBI IG report declared that serious concerns, I believe was the word they
Correct.
Used. And no action was taken. And these guys, one of them, as I recall, was actually, the daughter of a target of one of these FBI investigations.
Well, that case was not related to my FBI work. That case was reported to the media by other whistleblowers, translators from the FBI's language division that dealt with Pakistan Urdu translation. Mm-hmm. That case had to do with this general who worked for General Mahmoud, ISI, in Washington, D.C., Pakistani embassy. And the counterintelligence for the FBI was and is targeting that institution and the ISI agents in the United States. So they ended up hiring and giving security clearance to this general's daughter, who ended up listening to her father and her father's colleagues and covered up for them.
So she was literally listening to her father on some of these wiretaps?
Correct, because she worked under counterintelligence, and the counterintelligence targeted the ISI entities under the cover of the Pakistani attaché.
And the ISI being the Pakistani intelligence agency akin to our CIA, I guess, out here.
Thank you.
Was she, the other one, Ken Dickerson, I believe. That was not the same case, correct?
No, that had to do with the Turkish Translation Division. And
right.
Again, that case was the one that was confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
And with that case, she was also married to Lieutenant Colonel, who worked for...
Well, did we lose you, Sibel?
Hello.
Oh, there we go. I think we lost you for a second. She was married to a who?
At the time, he was a major who was working for Richard Pearl and Douglas Feith in Pentagon on Central Asian issues, and they were both members of organizations that were the targets of FBI's investigations.
Is she still working there?
No. No, actually, they fled the country. They left in 2002 after my case became public, and they haven't been back as far as I know.
Okay. And yet, there are still some of the people that you had concerns about that are still working within that actual unit.
Again, I haven't been in touch with people inside, but last time I heard, some of those people were still working. In fact, some of them have been promoted.
Of course they have. And all of this is no small potatoes, because these cases we're talking about, these weren't, bribery, extortion, numbers running. We're talking about some pretty serious things, as we later learned from the UK Sunday Times, who were willing to report on this while the U.S. media was not. We're talking about nuclear secrets and people who were essentially being, what was the word you used? They were being hooked by foreign agents, bribed essentially, and nuclear secrets were going out all over the world, and that is in fact how allegedly that A.Q. Khan ended up with a nuclear bomb in Pakistan.
Correct.
All right. So this is serious business, and there seems to have been, is it possible, Sibel Edmonds, in your case, that there was accountability brought that we just don't know about it, that some of these folks were cleared out, but it remained a secret. Is that possible?
No, because you all know the individuals and where they are today. I mean, all you have to do, take a look at Mark Grossman and Richard Pearl and Douglas Feith and General Scowcroft, and you will see that they are still continuing their businesses as usual.
Yeah, and one of those folks is actually Dennis Hastert, the former Speaker of the House,
right,
who has now gone to work for the Turkish government.
Isn't that amazing? Because,
yeah,
as you know, in 2005, August 2005, Vanity Fair had a 7 page article on this issue and the fact that several FBI agents and DOJ officials as sources and some congressional people confirmed to this reporter, David Rose, that at the time, Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert was the recipient of various briberies and other illegal conduct. Let's put it that way. And this came out, and Dennis Hastert didn't do anything. They didn't go and sue Vanity Fair. In fact, they didn't really issue a real denial. And as you know, he resigned a year later, and now he works actually for the Turkish lobby that the Vanity Fair article named as the place, one of the entities that was giving Mr. Hastert his bribes.
Oh, they actually, Vanity Fair had named that particular firm?
Correct, because they work with the American Turkish Council and the ATA,
mm-hmm.
and they are the clients for the lobbying firms that he is working for today. And the government of Turkey, of course, they are now registered, this lobbying firm for Hastert is registered under Foreign Agents Registration Act. And again, there's been nothing in the press saying, oh yeah, this came up.
Well, when Vanity Fair reported this, and it was an exhaustive expose, frankly, I can't remember how many thousands of words it was, but I mean, they went into great detail. After the Vanity Fair story, did the other media, AP, New York Times, Washington Post, did they pick the story up in any way to advance what he had to say? I mean, just amongst the many remarkable things he had to say.
Not one.
And they were alleging the Speaker of the House, this was at the time that he was the Speaker of the House, and they were alleging that he was accepting thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars from these Turkish foreign agents, correct?
And Brad, this was not based on my testimony. This article was written
mm-hmm.
with really strict conditions on the author, on the investigative journalist. Usually they require 2 to 3 sources. In this case, for this particular case, because the Speaker of the House was involved, because
right.
of the case being high profile, they required more than 4 or 5 sources. So that's what this reporter got. And you know how they usually do fact-checking after the article is submitted by the reporter.
Right.
Well, in this case, they did triple fact-checking. They did it 3 times, going back to every single source. And so they really did their homework. And again, this is not an alternative media outlet. We are looking at Vanity Fair.
Vanity Fair.
They have 2 million
right.
Circulation number, and yet not one newspaper or network channel or cable, nobody reported on it. There was this deafening silence, and you reported on it, so you should go.
I did report on it at Brad Blog, and you say nobody reported on it. I think what you mean is nobody in this country, because
absolutely.
The story did get picked up in, did it get picked up in Turkey?
Absolutely. In Turkey, it ended up becoming the front page story for a week or so on every single newspaper, not one, not two, but every single newspaper. And it was covered by CNN Turk in Turkey. And it was covered by all their networks and the radio stations and everywhere. And nothing here.
So CNN actually covered it, just their Turkish language version of their cable channel.
Correct. Yeah.
Unbelievable. What do you, and we're going to get into this in a bit, your new project where you're essentially outing the folks in the media who aren't doing their jobs, Project Expose MSM, but what do you attribute the fact that nobody, after this stunning expose in Vanity Fair, and of course several years later when you allowed me to announce at Brad Blog that you were ready to tell all, to what do you attribute that the U.S. media did not then pick up the story, has still not today picked up the story?
Right. There are many factors, and if people go to the website 123realchange.blogspot.com, I have done several series of 5, 4, 5 part series on the various factors contributing to this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have everybody has been talking about the mainstream media today becoming the extension of the government. They've been this way for a long time, but the extent of it is mind-boggling today. And also, you have lazy journalism. You have, to a certain degree, actually, to a large degree, this reliance on the government, inside government forces, high-level officials, meaning, let's say a reporter, well-known reporter, let's say with the New York Times or Newsweek, has a high-level source in the Justice Department, and getting their stories and getting their confirmations or denials from those people, and in many cases being told by their sources not to run a story. And we have had several cases of that. And in this for this project, you know, my case is only one that we have had as a report, but
mm-hmm.
I am going to report that I have been reporting other cases. As you know, the last one was on Time Magazine and the Drug Enforcement Agency, DEA agents, and these are high-level DEA agents, who reported a very, very serious case with all the documents, the supporting documents, and you're looking at 3-4 high-level DEA agents. And these were not what they labeled as disgruntled employees. You're looking at SES level, senior executive level, special agents in charge with DEA, taking the story, explosive story, to the Time magazine with all the backing documents, supporting documents, and they were censored. You know, the story was blacked out.
Somebody blacked it out, and yeah, and that's what I'm trying to figure out. Was it that they were lazy, didn't bother to report it, or there were reporters who wanted to report it, but they were held back by their bosses, by the government, perhaps, who said, oh, no, don't run this story. It's too explosive.
And we don't know the answers. And sometimes some of this stuff gets to be known publicly. As you know, with the AT&T whistleblower, he went to the LA Times, and he gave the story to this reporter, and the reporter was solid. He was good. The reporter gave it to his editor, and the editor, what did he do? He notified the NSA. And told them that they had a source who had given them the story. And then, based on the instruction the editor got, the LA Times editor got, he sat on the story for 5 months and blacked it out, didn't publish.
Was that LA Times or New York Times, Sibel?
No, this was LA Times.
Okay, hold the thought. I got to get to a break. Sibel Edmonds here with us for the rest of the hour. We've got some lines open, 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. We'd love to have you ask your questions of Sibel. I got plenty for her, but if you got any, now's the time to ask them. Hang on, Sibel. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Much more right after this. Welcome back to the Malloy Show, Brad. Oh, that's good. Good job, Tony. Brad, in for Malloy, going to be a jailbreak. Speaking with Sibel Edmonds, former FBI translator, whistleblower, founder and director of the National Security Whistleblowers Coalition. She's telling her story, and we're taking your calls at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Not Malloy's usual number. Don't bother them. They're on vacation. Bother us. We'd love to talk to you. Sibel, I have more questions for you, but so do our callers. You want to hit some of those?
Sure.
All right. Yeah, what's that, Dan? Okay. Let me get to some of these calls. And where am I? Jeremy. There we go. Jeremy in Huntington Beach. Welcome to the show. Jeremy, you have a question for Sibel Edmonds.
I actually did have somewhat of a statement slash question. That is, we seem to have a kind of a long history of arming our enemies and arming both sides of a conflict. You know, clear back to World War II, I think, what was it, Union Banking or something like that, Prescott Bush, his bank or whatever, was laundering money for the Nazis. You know, of course, you could forget the Iran-Contra incident. We were arming Iran and Iraq. You know, and needless to say, Saddam Hussein, we were arming him to the teeth. He was a nobody before we got our hands on him, gave him all his weapons, you know, chemical, biological, even pre-nuclear precursors in some cases, from what I read. And, you know, it just seems to me that the most paranoid part of me seems to think, I mean, you got to wonder if there are some people inside of our government or certain Western companies that actually want us to be defeated. It's always been understood that, you know, if a real defeat in military conflict would welcome basically it would kill democracy.
Jeremy, let me phrase that in a form of a question since we're coming up to the top of the hour. Sibel, can it be that rather than a few rogue bad apples, if you will, even though they're incredibly high-ranking bad apples, can it be that this is actually the policy of this government somehow to allow these nuclear secrets and so forth to get out around the country?
Well, you're looking at a business. You know, you're looking at the military-industrial complex, and that's a business, okay? And we sustain, and it sustains itself with conflict and war. I mean, think about it. Right now, if we didn't have this conflict that we created ourselves, ourselves in Afghanistan, and then let's say it was in late 1990s, we had the Albania and Kosovo, every single one of these sustains the military-industrial complex. I mean, think about a very peaceful world. These conflicts and wars. Well, who are you going to sell it to?
But would these
They're going to go out of business.
Well, it's one thing to have a continue the war, but would these guys be psychotic enough to allow to want to arm some of these countries with nuclear weapons just to keep this military-industrial complex going, Sibel?
But then you're looking at a totally different issue. I mean, when you're looking at, let's say, Pakistan with the nuclear and obtaining the nuclear facilities, and
right.
This is with A.Q. Khan in 1980s. This was when everything was played, every single strategy was based on the Cold War. And it was, okay, Pakistan, ally, and every country would want to have this. I mean, we back then said it was deterrent, and we were going to use it as deterrent. Why other countries can't use that as deterrent? And who has used these nuclear weapons throughout the history of the nuclear industry except us?
Well,
we're the only nation that has a history of like really going and using it with our Hiroshima.
Yep. All right.
So therefore, these countries, they have their own set of reasons to acquire it. You have the military-industrial complex with selling the business and conflict. And during the Cold War, we looked the other ways when our allies, so-called allies, obtained this technology. And in some cases, some people within our governments made money off of it.
Some people made a lot of money. Sibel Edmonds. Sibel, can you stick around into the next hour with us?
Sure.
All right. Sibel Edmonds, she's going to stick around. Take your call. 877-520-1150. A lot of you hanging on hold. We're going to get to you. We still have room to get other folks in, though. 877-520-1150. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy all this week, speaking with Sibel Edmonds. David Swanson's going to join us later to talk about torture accountability. Oh, yeah, it's that kind of night. Don't worry, we'll cheer you up with Mark Sanford soon. Stick with us.